Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So tonight I'd like to talk about how the practice helps us to deal with differences and differences that we meet in our everyday life. Differences in attitudes, differences in styles, differences in the way we look, differences in the way we think. How we relate to difference and how we can learn to hold difference without making a leap to judgmental mind and making things right or wrong, good or bad. And I'd like to speak about this tonight because in the past fortnight I've been participating in a seminar of bhikkhunis and 10 precept nuns and 8 precept nuns from the Theravada tradition of Buddhism. First ever bhikkhuni seminar to be held in Australia. That was held recently at Santi Forest Monastery in Bundanoon outside Sydney. And this seminar was not a decision-making body, but it was a bringing together of nuns practicing in this tradition who are living all over the world. And 24 nuns from all around came to participate. There were nuns from the USA and Germany, but also nuns from Vietnam, from Indonesia, from Thailand, from Sri Lanka, and also from Australia. And although we were all nuns and all committed to the monastic lifestyle and all having a lot of similarities, also each of us are individuals and coming from different situations and different stages in our practice. So coming together in a seminar to discuss our lifestyles and to discuss particularly the issue of higher ordination for women in this Theravada tradition, it was an opportunity to really see very clearly things that we share together, but also to see differences. And my approach to this time together in this seminar was really to try and stay in touch with the movement in the mind or the movement in the heart that arises when we encounter difference and how we deal with it, how we keep our minds open, how we keep our hearts open without, as I said, jumping to judgment. So all of us as nuns with shaven head and wearing robes, all those things obviously the same, but also differences of colour, skin colour, difference of robe colour, difference of style of robe, difference in the way of doing things. So lots of opportunities to see things that we feel comfortable with because it's the way I do it or the way we do it, and opportunity to notice discomfort because it's different from what I'm used to. And the way that the Buddha explains the workings of the mind It's a very natural process that whatever we're encountering in the present moment is always filtered through our past experience and our previous knowledge of this thing that we're encountering now. So when we come into a situation that's happening right now, we aren't relating to the situation just as it is. We're relating to it with all of our baggage, all of our conditioning. And we're not saying that that's necessarily bad. That's just the way it is. That's the way the mind works. And our practice is to make us aware of that process as it's happening in the present moment. How the external environment and the internal environment are meeting and producing reactions in the present moment. Because our reactions in the present moment, some of them are coming from the past. Some of them are what we call the fruiting of old karma. And how we deal with that, how we relate to that in the present moment, is where we make new karma. So when we see something that is, we come into a group situation, the nature of the mind, the way that the mind functions, is to look for the similarities, the familiarities, the things that we know, and also to pick out the things that are different, the things that are maybe a threat to our security, a threat to our well-being. And in terms of evolutionary psychology, we're told that we've really been trained and conditioned and developed to be able to pick out anything in our environment that might be a threat. This is how we've survived. Those of us who are able to recognize things that are different and that might be a threat, we're the ones that don't get eaten by the tiger, because we notice there's a movement there that shouldn't be there, there's a colour there that shouldn't be there. And over many, many generations, we're the survivors. So the mind is programmed as it comes into a situation to be aware of differences, as well as to be aware of familiarity and similarities. And when we are confronted with any situation, we are processing a multitude of contacts, all seemingly at once, but in fact is the way that the Buddha explained it from his own experience. It's not that it's all happening at once, but it's happening with such rapidity, one after the other, that there's hardly time for one contact that produces a reaction to be processed fully before we're dealing with the next one. So we have this great mix of reactions that are happening in any one moment. And what is happening is that the mind is sorting out the things that we know, the things that we recognize, the things that we have some familiarity with, and also sorting out those things which are new to us, which are different, which maybe we have to be careful of. And together with that sorting out, which the Buddha called our sanya or perception, there is also the gut feeling or the vedana that goes along with us, with it. This gut feeling of pleasant, unpleasant or neutral feeling in response to what we are seeing or hearing or smelling or tasting or feeling through the body. And this processing is going on, as I said, with such rapidity, one after the other, that one doesn't get finished before the next thing is being processed. And so what we experience is a mixture of pleasant, unpleasant feelings arising in any situation. And so you can imagine that it takes a trained mind, a mind that's really able to focus in, to the present moment, that's really able to focus into that place where the internal environment and the external environment meet, to be able to focus in there and to stay focused without moving, so that we can see this set of reactions that are arising. The untrained mind is unable to hold its seat, to unable to hold the focus of its awareness at that point of meeting of the internal and the external. The untrained mind usually gets pulled out into the external environment, into the objects, the people, the faces, the colours, the smells that are going on outside, focusing there, instead of recognising through experience that those objects are just triggering off a reaction internally. And that's where we have to focus our awareness, so that we can see what this meaning is for me. If it's an object that we've had a pleasant experience with in the past, then it will trigger off a pleasant feeling. And that pleasant feeling is what we react to. If it's an object that we've had an unpleasant experience with in the past, it will trigger off an unpleasant feeling within us. And that's what we react to, not the object. So our practice is to be able to focus at that point of interaction between the external and the internal environment, and to focus there long enough to start to pull apart, if you like, the process that's happening, to be able to identify the object as distinct from the reaction that we have to it. To be able to hold our seat, hold our focus of awareness at that point, so that we don't just act automatically. We don't just act in terms of our past experience, our past conditioning, that we don't, because of our past conditioning, fail to meet this situation with fresh eyes. This is what we're practicing to be able to do, to meet this situation with fresh eyes. And when I say fresh eyes, I mean not just our physical eyes, seeing something as new, as fresh, as itself, not coloured by our past experience, but our reactions to that, the next stage in the process. The tendency of the mind when we come in contact with difference, and to register that difference as something that we have to be careful about, the tendency of the mind is to then move to the reaction of judging. This thing is right or wrong or good or bad. This is out of self-preservation. As I said, this is the way we've been conditioned for survival. And if we don't bring our conscious awareness to that the situation that we face now, where we're not actually threatened with something that's life-threatening, but just something that's different or unusual or makes us feel confused or whatever, then we very often just make a judgment. We leap from noticing it's different, noticing it's not something we're familiar with, we jump straight away to a judgment about it without any curiosity about its actual nature. The judgment happens so automatically, so quickly, that we assume it must be the truth. But it's coming from our past experience with this thing, not our reaction that's fresh in this moment. Now, the way that we work with judgment is that we somehow, depending on our conditioning, our judgment might be always, well, I'm right and you're wrong. That's as simple as that. Or because of our past conditioning, it might be, well, I must be wrong, you must be right. It's very rarely that we are able to hold difference as something that is simply difference, and the possibility that we both might be right, or the possibility that we both might be wrong. Usually, because of our conditioning, we jump to conclusions about right or wrong, good or bad, relative to the other person or the other things in the situation. And a very good example of the difference between a judgmental mind and a curious, open mind, which might see difference and say, well, what is that? Why is that? How is that? It might be different, but it mightn't be wrong, is an example one of the nuns gave of living in an Australian country town, being the only Buddhist nun around, and she was wearing a very bright yellow robe. And one day she was walking down the street and some children came up to her and said, why are you wearing that colour? Why are you wearing that robe? And she said, well, I'm a Buddhist nun and this is the colour that I was given when I ordained and this is the colour that I wear. And they said to her, we like your colour because it was nice and bright and yellow and very, very happy looking. And then they said to her, why do you shave your hair? Why have you got no hair on your head? And she said, well, this is what Buddhist nuns do, and this is what I was taught when I became a Buddhist nun, so this is what I do. And one of the little girls said, well, that must be very good because you wouldn't have any nits. And this was their attitude of appreciating something that they didn't understand, was different, but they were curious about it rather than just judgmental. So we can ask ourselves when we encounter something that we're unfamiliar with, that's different from what we're used to, that doesn't look the way we like it to look or whatever. What springs to mind? Is it curiosity? Why is it like that? How do they keep it like that? Or does judgment spring to mind? That must be wrong. That's not right. To be able to observe this process, this is what our practice of mindfulness, awareness, and developing the mind in calm meditation allows us to do. It allows us to hold our seat and to observe what is produced through coming in contact with this situation. How does it make us feel? And how does that, how we feel, prompt us in our next reaction? And how do we refrain from just acting automatically with judgment? How do we rediscover that sense of curiosity to really inquire about this difference? And we might notice that as we try to stay open and find that curiosity, that we've actually, there's fear telling us, oh, be careful. Oh, you don't know what they're going to do or what they're going to say or why they're doing that, or it's not what we used to. And notice that there's fear. Fancy that. What a surprise. Why is there fear in a situation that is actually not life-threatening at all? What is it that we're trying to protect? Where does that fear come from? This sort of investigation is, again, part of our practice, because the Buddha is pointing out to us very often that we are operating from this sense of self that has to be protected. This sense of self that has a prefabricated idea of what the world is like, how the world should be, how we are, and how the world should treat us. And this sense of self or ego is what needs to be protected, where the fear arises. And so encountering difference and being able to directly experience that fear that arises, somehow I might be wrong by being different. Something might happen to me by being different. We encounter that need to protect this idea of who we are. So who we are has fixed boundaries. There's you and there's me. There's a gap between the two of us. There's a border between the two of us, a barrier between the two of us, because we come to this situation with already a firm, fixed idea of who we are and how the world is. So to be able to have a pliable, open mind to encounter difference without feeling threatened by it, with curiosity that really wants to know, not just curiosity about the object, but curiosity about how we react to the object. So in this Bhikkhuni seminar, so many of us coming together for the first time, it was very interesting to see a certain amount of defensiveness in the first few days of being together, wanting to protect our boundaries, to be right or perceived in a way that we wanted to make a good impression, and somehow feeling that that was a way of protecting our sense of self. And over the course of the seminar, seeing how those boundaries started to become more flexible as we developed a sense of being in so much common ground, a sense of understanding without judgment, and a sense of trusting each other to speak about the difficulties as well as the joys of being a Buddhist nun. And in such a situation where we're all trained to try to keep the mind open, keep the heart open, to be introspective, to be mindful, it was very heartening to see the opening taking place over the few days of the seminar. But also interesting to see how coming into a situation that displays difference, how natural it is to go into defensive mode. And this is what is happening to us all the time, every day, as we go about our life in the world. The other reaction that we have, instead of making people wrong or ourselves wrong when we notice difference, is in order to be comfortable, we try to make everyone the same. So we don't allow that there are any real differences. We try to cover up anything that we might perceive as creating discord. We try to say, well, ultimately, we're all the same, because we find it too challenging to actually acknowledge difference. We find our judgmental mind or our threatened mind too quickly leaps into the fray before we have a chance to actually recognize the differences and not make them wrong. So one of the ways in which we often hear that in terms of Buddhism is that when we encounter different religions, there's very often a tendency to try and say, well, we're all the same, really. We're all heading for the same place. We've all got the same goal. There's really no difference between any of the religions, so we can all live in harmony. We can all be together. Whereas, in fact, it's not impossible to recognize that there are differences, that we don't all have the same goal, that we aren't all working for the same realization, and to allow that to be without having to, if you like, paper over it and say, yes, we're all the same. So today being Good Friday, when people came to the monastery, I asked those who were there for Dharana today, how come they were there today? They usually don't come on the weekday. And they said, oh, we've got a public holiday today. Ah, well, what's the public holiday? It's Easter. Yes, what day is it in Easter? Good Friday. Ah, what happened on Good Friday? What is the Christian belief of what is happening on Good Friday? So most people didn't know, which is okay, not from a Christian background, but living in a predominantly Christian society, it's good to know. So today, Good Friday, is the day when Christians believe that Jesus, who was the Son of God, was crucified and died to save us of our sins. And so that's the Christian idea. And we can go to heaven as long as we have the faith that that's the truth, that Jesus was God's Son and he died for our sins. Now, the point I was making to people today at the monastery was when we're living in a Christian society, we need to know what are the things that we share with Christianity as Buddhists so we can engage with those things and feel ourselves to be part of this society, particularly when we've got children who are growing up in this society, growing up in this culture, going to school. How can they feel part of the society without thinking, oh no, we're different, we're Buddhists? There are lots of things that we share in common with Christianity. So in terms of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the Buddhist blueprint for living a good life and cultivating the spiritual path to liberation, the parts of the path which are to do with virtue or morality, the sila part, and the part that is to do with cultivation of the mind in meditation, the samadhi part, all of those things we share with Christianity. So in the virtue part of the Noble Eightfold Path, there is right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And we're given the five precepts by the Buddha as guidelines for how to put these things into practice in daily life. Not to deliberately harm any living beings, not to take what is not given, to be honourable in our sexual relationships and in our committed partnerships, to be truthful in our speech and honest in our relationships, and to not use drugs and alcohol because they confuse the mind. And that is something which all of us can aspire to do in our daily life. And this is what it means to be a good person, to cultivate those behaviours and those qualities which lead to a life of integrity, a life where we can feel ourselves to be a good human being. And this is what all religions try to develop in their followers. And then the second part of the Noble Eightfold Path is to do with the cultivation of the mind, not just in meditation, but starting to look at the mind in an objective way, with mindfulness and right effort, trying to identify different states of mind as they arise, see what they do to the mind and how they help or hinder us in our relationships with ourselves and with others, and then to use meditation to start to look even more deeply into the mind and develop it in understanding and in tranquility. And as the mind becomes more tranquil, more clear, then we're able to, as I said earlier, hold our seat when things that are a challenge to us come into our awareness. It's the strong mind that's developed through meditation practice, supported by goodness, that helps us to do that. So in the meditation, I was encouraging you, as the mind calms down and space between the breaths gets longer, to hold your seat as the breath comes in and the breath goes out, and to develop contentment just to stay there and wait patiently for the next breath to come in and go out, not to try and speed up the breath or to make it pass quickly, but to just develop that ability to wait patiently for whatever is coming. This is how we, in this simple practice, develop the strength of mind to hold our seat when what we're dealing with is not just the neutral breath, but strong emotions, things that we like and things that we don't like, that we can stay without moving and focus our attention on the place where the internal world meets the external world, and focus there so that we can see clearly what's going on, and that we can think before we react what is for my good at this moment, what will be harmless for myself and others, what will be truthful in this moment. How do I live out my promises in this moment? So we have a moment, an opportunity, a space for reflection before we speak and act. So our life of goodness and the cultivation of the mind in meditation allows us to do that. But this is not something that's unique to Buddhism. If you go to many Christian churches, for example, you will find meditation as one of the main things that they are advertising as a skill which they're teaching. Meditation is not exclusively Buddhist. So a virtuous life and starting to develop the mind in meditation, these are things that we hold in common with other religions. But what is it that is unique about Buddhism? And when I ask people at the monastery today, what is it that's unique about Buddhism? And we had children there and we had adults, and I said, now the adults can give an answer. Don't have to wait for the children to give an answer. Everyone was silent. Ah, what's the right answer to the question? It wasn't a trick question, it was simply, what's the thing about Buddhism that is unique, that is different, and that we can say is different? We don't deny that it's different. We don't say it's all the same. We say there are lots of things that are the same in all the religions, but there are things that are different. So the thing that is unique about Buddhism and is different from all the other religions is the emphasis on wisdom, or punya, the third aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path. And someone actually gave the answer, right view. Right view and right intention or aspiration are the two aspects of panya or wisdom in the Noble Eightfold Path. And that right view is a right view that doesn't talk about a saviour who has died for us, and because of his sacrifice, no matter how great that sacrifice was, that has saved us from any kind of retribution, or that has paved the way for us to go directly to heaven. That is not part of the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha's teaching comes from a completely different angle, where the Buddha says that each one of us is responsible for our own destiny through our deliberate thought, speech, and action. That we certainly can go to heaven if we live a good life and create the conditions for rebirth in a favourable place, the heavenly realm where things are just very pleasant, but that rebirth won't be permanent. Every rebirth, even in a heavenly realm, is only for a certain time. And then after that time is over, we can be reborn again somewhere else. In fact, we will be reborn somewhere else while we still have the craving to be, the tanha, the desire to live. And that our desire to live and our desperation to be safe and secure and to keep going at any odds is because of our ignorance or wrong understanding. This is a fundamental difference between Buddhism and other religions. And we're not saying that that necessarily makes us right and them wrong. Because unless we've tasted the fruits of this path, and we know from our personal experience this is the truth, then we can't really say, well, they're wrong and we're right. We can only say that we have faith or confidence from what we know so far of practicing this path, that the Buddha's way of explaining life and reality is closer to what we have experienced. And so we're not all heading for the same place. Our goals aren't the same. The goal of this path of practice is to gradually come closer to the truth, understanding the way that life is, purifying the mind of greed, self-centered greed, hatred, self-centered hatred, and wrong understanding of where we fit into life. And that as we gradually practice this path and continually challenge our self-centered view of life, that our understanding of reality will change. Our understanding of ourselves will change. Our understanding of where we fit into life will change. And that ultimately the goal of Buddha's practitioner is to attain nibbana. And nibbana isn't a state of heavenly bliss that goes on and on forever. Nibbana is defined as the complete absence of greed, hatred, and delusion, and at the end of the life, that there is no further rebirth. No rebirth in heaven, no rebirth in any of the celestial realms, no rebirth that depends on someone else saving us and taking us to that place. So there's a fundamental difference between the Buddhist goal and the good Buddhist outlook to the Christian. Now, how do we hold that and honour the things that are the same, but honour also the differences without saying we're right and you're wrong, we're good and you're bad, or because we live in a non-Buddhist culture and a predominantly Christian culture and a materialistic culture, that we must be wrong, we must be out of step with the times. We can't really survive as in today's world. We're dinosaurs. Very interesting question, because coming together with this group of Buddhist nuns, following a tradition that's 2,600 years old, wearing robes that are 2,600 years old, wearing a hairstyle that's 2,600 years old, following rules that many of them aren't in step with modern life. How do we refrain from feeling that we're dinosaurs and that there's no place for us in modern society? How do we refrain from trying to make everything a compromise, that there's no difference, that we don't have to be different, that being different is somehow wrong? These are quite fundamental questions if you think about wanting to live this lifestyle and to live it wholeheartedly and to live it with a sense of integrity, of really believing that it's worthwhile, of really believing that it has something to offer even in today's world. So this was another aspect of my experience in the week that I was at the seminar, to ask myself that question again and again. Is this something that really aids my spiritual practice, my spiritual growth, and the path to liberation? And very happy to say there was a resounding yes for me. But this is something that all of us need to practice with, particularly as we aspire to live a Buddhist lifestyle in a non-Buddhist culture. And even if we're in a Buddhist culture, to live a lifestyle that isn't just paying lip service to the trappings of Buddhism, but is actually going to the heart of the practice, because ultimately that's what defines us, the practice that we do, and the way that we uncover the truth within ourselves. And when we uncover the truth for ourselves within ourselves, that's when we can really hold our own seat. Even if we come in contact with people who don't agree with us, who don't like what we're doing, who even might think negatively about what we're doing, or who simply don't understand what we're doing, we can hold our seat long enough to let that negativity be received, but not allow that negativity to force our behaviour, and to hold it so that we can then respond to it with skill, with explanation, trying to show, yes, this is what we do, this is why we do it. You might find it different or strange, but that's okay. We don't have to all agree, we don't have to all be alike. So this practice is about opening us up to our own experience, but giving us a framework within which to examine that experience. And to go back to the explanation that the Buddha gave of how the mind works, as we encounter the present moment, it is always affected by our past experience and our past conditioning, conditioning that we've been subject to from the time we were born, how we were dealt with as a child. When we cried, did someone come and pick us up, or did someone just leave us to cry? From that very early age, that is the sort of conditioning we get about what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, who am I in all this? So we're starting to become aware of that, the past that colours the present, and then developing a mind which is capable not only of seeing that past in the present, but in the present moment discerning, how should I react to this situation right now? Unless we practice making the mind strong and cultivating goodness, we don't have that in our repertoire. We don't have that as a possible way of responding. So we have to practice being patient, being kind, being generous over and over and over again. So it becomes second nature. So we have it there as a part of our repertoire, as a reaction that we can use in the present moment. And then as we start to refrain from doing what we've always been doing, as we bring in these new behaviours, we are recreating our experience. We're recreating our world. And that world will always be unique for each one of us. And how can we honour that? How can we feel at ease with that? How can we know when we need to change because it's not helpful for ourselves or others? But how do we know when we need to hold our seat and stand firm? It's what this practice helps us to do, always going in the direction of what is most beneficial for ourselves and for others now and in the future, most in accordance with reality, living a life that takes us towards liberation. So may this teaching be of benefit to all of us, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yes, so the comment was that it's good to explore the things that we share with other religions, and in Christianity Christ is given a prominent or elevated or exalted position, and in Buddhism the Buddha occupies that position, and having those, if you like, I guess, role models of that it's possible and how to do it is something that inspires us to feel that we can also accomplish what they accomplished. So that's something that we can see in both religions, that there is this role model. Of course, the difference is in the Buddhist approach, that ultimately the Buddha described himself as only the shower of the way, and that each of us has to do the work for ourselves. So the idea of grace, which we often hear that people are helped through the grace of God, for example, in the Christian religion, in Buddhism, grace is our good karma fruiting when we least expect it, or that we have good things happening to us that we don't even know how that could have happened or where they're coming from, but it's the result of our past good actions bearing fruit in the present. And we can all, I'm sure, attest to times in our life when things have come along or been there to help us when we couldn't have wished for anything better, but we didn't actually make it happen right now. So that is our grace in terms of the Buddhist approach. So to try as much as possible to see what we share, but also to try to look at things and investigate them so that we see what are the differences. And in Buddhism, it's a self-help business rather than a self-help path. We have to do the work. Yes. Yes. So the question is, I was referring to this meeting with nuns from different parts of the world. Were there differences in the way that we were doing things, and even though we were all followers of the Buddha? No, the differences were very superficial. Basically, what we felt was a great commonality, and it was a wonderful experience to be with them, whether they were from Asia or Europe, whether they were living in Asia or Europe. There was a great feeling of all being doing the same thing and having the same aspirations and practicing in the same way. There's a great sense of commitment to the Buddha Dharma and to the path of liberation, as well as to the monastic lifestyle, sort of fully going for it. Yes. So, yes, yes. Well, there are a lot of, why is it in some sects there are differences, and not just the robes but customs? This is because of different customs in different countries, and as the Buddhist tradition went to different countries, it adopted many of the customs of that country because it was just a way of fitting in. And so robes did change as the teaching went into countries that were very cold. Then the robes changed so that those who were wearing the robes could be, their bodies could be better protected from the cold. Eating habits, many different things changed. But for these nuns, the nuns were all in the Theravada forest tradition, basically. So there were some differences in the colour of robes, but not really in the way of practice. So it was all one group. Okay, so the comment is that I may have misrepresented the Christian approach, and for that I apologise if that's what you feel that I've done, that it may be that Christianity also puts responsibility on the practitioner to do the work. Thank you. So are there any other comments or questions? So just as we can see that there are many different sects of Buddhism and many different approaches, so we can say that with any religion. So I guess one of the things I'm trying to encourage people to do is not to think that one size fits all, or that one explanation is necessarily all the explanation. And in fact, it's to encourage us to look at the differences and the things that are the same, and to explore the things that we don't understand.
So one other area that might be useful to explore is that Christian response to living the life. But I think it begins with that act of others, which can be seen as saving. But I think Buddhism may well say the same sort of thing that Ajahn Brahma often talked about, self-acceptance.
So the comment is that Good Friday starts with an act of love, and then one has to grow from that, and that in Buddhist practice also we have the act of love, of loving ourselves, and this is a foundation for the practice that we do, so that that is another point of commonality between the two religions.